You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Hi, this is Siri. I would never, never ever listen to the Earth Station 1 podcast. Who the heck says howdy anyway? Why don't you listen to Chris Hardwick instead? I can get you his information. The Nerdist is everywhere anyway, haha. That was a joke. The Earth Station 1 podcast. It's time to let your inner geek out to play. You can find them at www.earthstation1.com or up on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Peace, and we're done.
Hello and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, the Monster. That's right, I am angry with thunder. I'm back to give you a review of Suicide Squad that I actually got to see earlier this week, today being Saturday. And yes, I've way behind on everything else, from the Comic-Con podcast, Star Trek podcast, and the Harry Potter podcast on my Page 49 podcast. So again, I will get to them as soon as I can. The reason why I'm actually doing the Suicide Squad is because earlier today, I had a program in my library in which I do a podcast program where we try to watch a movie or a show or something to that effect, and then record the podcast and edit and so forth. But today I decided, let me go through the whole process of recording the podcast in front of the teens that were there about Suicide Squad and show them what I do. Well, I also, in addition to that recording, I also use a mixing board, which, thanks to my cousin, I got it to work. So thanks, cousin. That's Cousin Ralph. And I was able to use Periscope today. So thanks to you, Richie, for helping me out on that. And of course, the comments that I normally don't get, because no one ever listens to my stuff, were just, you know, the typical trolls that are out there. So the old saying, I'm rubber, you're glue, is true, and your mama. So with that, let's begin with, I'm redoing the podcast because I didn't like the way it came out initially. But if you go to Periscope, and if you find it under my Twitter handle name, which is the Monster Sci-Fi Show, but with the S-Y-F-Y, you should be able to find it, and you can see me kind of... Wow, it's really getting dark and stormy out there. It's a dark and stormy night. All right, so again, I listened to the podcast. I wasn't happy with it, even though we had a mixing board and a professional microphone. Not that I don't love my Snowball mic, but I wanted to start playing around with professional equipment and see what we can manage to do. So now we're back to this. Me at home, Saturday night, raining out, cats inside. I couldn't ask for anything better. So, let's begin with Suicide Squad. So, is this DC's version of The Dirty Dozen? Which, oddly enough, came out about 2 months before my birthday, on June 15th. So, if you want to do the math, I'm just as old as The Dirty Dozen. In 2 days from now. Lucky me. Or is this Suicide Squad just another fancy version of Jackie Chan's Fantasy Mission Force, which you can find on Hoopla Digital? If you have a library that does have that digital service, you can watch it there. And then we kind of go into the ish parts like that Magnificent Seven or Akira Kurosawa's Seven Samurai or even A Bug's Life, where it's also the ish part in which there's one person looking to get a team together to fight the bad guys. Or is this DC's version of Escape from New York, the original one by John Carpenter, in which Snake Plissken has to go into New York, which was turned into a prison, to rescue the president, but he has a tiny... Wow. That's fierce. He has little bombs implanted inside his body, which will burst and, of course, kill him instantly. So, very similar in what Suicide Squad in this movie and all those other movies have in common. So, I tried to do a Prezi presentation as I was talking, and I had Jamelia, who was the librarian who does the U-Media Center. So she was helping me out on that. So I'm going back and forth between who these people are, to tell the teams who these people are in the comics and the movies and how is it all working together. And after a while, I could just see them kind of glaze over their eyes, just like, what the hell is he talking about and all that fun stuff. Hence why, even though I was doing good, I'm going to redo it again. So let's start off with this. Spoiler alert, if you have not seen Suicide Squad, then please stop listening to this podcast. Alright, so I've gave you fair warning. Let's move forward. Alright, so we have Amanda Waller, who we know is head of the Suicide Squad, or at least wanted to form something like this in the fallout of Batman vs. Superman to help protect its citizens from metahumans by using other metahumans to fight for them, or at least go on covert missions, and if anything goes wrong, they get thrown under the bus, no one knows anything more about them, and so forth. Alright, so the actress is not Wala Davis, although it's spelled and pronounced, if you're French, I think, Wala. It's Viola Davis. So if you know her and you know her work, Ender's Game she was in recently that we watched in New Media a couple of months ago. Of course, she was in Star Trek First Contact. She is supposedly coming up in a Harriet Tubman movie in coming years, so we'll see what happens with that. But I couldn't think of a better actress to play Amanda Waller. In the preparation and for this role, she read a book by M.E. Thomas, which is an autobiography called Confessions of a Sociopath. So, if that's the book she read to prepare, and the way she showcased Amanda and her lack of emotions, even though she's very logical, very cold-blooded, I really want to read that book to find out how much of that was an influence on her. Because she was really, really good. So, she gets to form the team, the Suicide Squad, and right off the bat, we have Dr. June Moon. In the beginning part, we have her finding out there's this... I guess she was doing an expedition, and she came across something that inhabited her body, like a spirit. Later on, we come to know her as the Enchantress, who, whenever Dr. Moon utters the word Enchantress, she switches bodies, or that personality where the Enchantress comes out, but still inhabiting her body. And that's Cara Delevingne. Sorry if I mispronounced the name. Oddly enough, her birthday was actually yesterday, August 12th. So she did Pan Anna Karenina, Karenina, Ninana, Paper Towns, and she also did Die Antwoord, Ugly Boy video, which I'll talk about that, because there is a connection between her and them later on. So I haven't seen her much in anything else other than Justice movie. And she was fine. I just thought, as later on when she really becomes the full-blown enchantress, towards the climax, I was just like not really happy with her performance or how she was moving about with her powers in the climax. I was just like, why can't she just stay still? She's kind of wiggling about like she has like an ant in her back and going down her pants, or it just seemed weird. So I wasn't really crazy about that. So her love interest is Rick Flagg. Rick Flagg is going to be heading the Suicide Squad. So he's in love with Dr. Moon. So he'll do anything for her. Hence why he's leading the Suicide Squad. But the character, it goes back much years ago to the original Suicide Squad back for the World War II setting. So I'll talk about that when I get to the comic book section. But that character has been around in various forms throughout the years in different comics, but he does appear in the original Suicide Squad, again, World War II setting. But for the actor, he was in the RoboCop remake, which I was not happy about. So he does get a pass, because I did like him in this, even though it's RoboCop is really kind of unforgivable. Damn it. He also is in House of Cards, which I have not seen, but I'll give him a try. Originally, the role was to be with Tom Hardy, who played Bane in the Batman The Dark Knight Rises. Yes, it's Dark Knight Rises. And Star Trek Nemesis, another Star Trek reference, in which he played the clone of Picard. It was the last Next Generation movie, which was god-awful. So he was up for that role, but forced to drop out due to scheduling conflict. So, yeah, it's okay. Next, we get finally the recruitment. So this is now the bulk of the team. Of course, everyone knows Deadshot is Will Smith. Do I really need to name any movies that he's been in? Everyone knows what he's done, like Men in Black, I Am Legend, I, Robot, Independence Day. Do I have to say that? But I just did, so there. He was great. It's kind of back to the Will Smith that wasn't the old hell no moment. It's Will Smith being good at being Will Smith, but without that oh hell no moment. He was funny, tough, and a good leader. I really liked his portrayal of Deadshot. Next we get Harley Quinn, played by Margot Robbie, who I did not know. She was in Legend of Tarzan, which recently came out and recently went out. She did star in a movie called Focus with Will Smith, which I knew about, and I actually wanted to see it before I saw Suicide Squad, but it's one of those that just... It was on my radar, but I never got a chance to go see it. And if you ever saw Wolf of Wall Street, I saw plenty of her on Wolf of Wall Street, and I love her a lot. I think she did a great job in those movies, and Wolf of Wall Street, and of course, in Suicide Squad, but really, she brought Harley to life in a very satisfying way that it was just like, I want to see more of Harley. And when I say more, I'm talking about more of the character, not more of, you know what I mean. All right, next we get is Diablo, played by Jay Hernandez. He was in a couple of movies, Friday Night Live, Ladder 49, and World Trade Center. I liked Diablo. The fact that we have a Latino, albeit a bad guy, we don't see many characters on a screen like that that's part of an ensemble or at least gets represented. And when I go into the versions or the comparison of the graphic novel and these characters, I'll talk more about that. But I really like Diablo a lot, just because of his backstory. Next we have Killer Croc, and I can never pronounce this guy's name, but if you ever watch Lost, he is Mr. Echo. I love Mr. Echo. So if you've not seen Lost, I recommend that you watch it, even though it gets really confusing and it's ongoing, but he's one of those bright characters that I'm just like mesmerized. So him being Killer Croc, it's not a bad thing. I just wish there was more of Killer Croc to do more than just be grunting and just wanting to eat things or bash things. It was just very one-dimensional. Next we have Boomerang by Jay Courtney. So if you've seen him in Spartacus or Jack Reacher round or Terminator Genesis, he was Kyle Reese. Now, movie was a disaster, but he wasn't too bad playing the role that Michael Biehn had done in the original Terminator. I just wish that movie really did something better, because it tried to kind of reset the button, and it was like, hey, let's put all the movies together into this one long movie, and then let's throw Matt Smith in there as Skynet. What? Whatever. He was okay. I actually enjoyed him. Again, not much of a backstory, but still, he was an ass. And he was fine being an ass, and that's what you kind of expect part of a Suicide Squad. The last person on this, second to last, I should say, his name is Slipknot. I've never heard of Slipknot, and I had to do research on who he was. That character is a master of the use of ropes, and including unbreakable ones. Okay? And he's a trained assassin. And he created a chemical adhesive that, when applied to his ropes, make them nearly indestructible. And yet, he lasted on the screen less than 5 minutes. He tried to escape because Boomerang, hey, let's try to get away from these guys. And then off he goes, and then boom, popped his head off. So that's actually played by Adam Beach, who was in Cowboys and Aliens, Flags of Our Fathers by Clint Eastwood. And he was in an episode of Law & Order, SVU. Dun dun. Lastly, finally, is Katana, played by Karen Fukuyara. This is actually her first movie. There is no other history that I see. She's done TV appearances, like on a Conan show, but nothing else to her credit as far as movies. Now, the Katana character has been played both as a villain and a good guy. The last version was in Arrow, the TV series, in which she does help Oliver Queen, and her husband was part of the League of Assassins. So it's enjoyable for that reason. But here, again, going down the list of characters, the less screen time or the less importance each one gets to play. She is a stunning woman, and she looks great on the screen. But there's nothing much to this character, and what they gave to explain her backstory was almost a disservice. For someone that is part of this universe, and it's kind of hard to do this in general, to have all these multiple characters and to have all this information be presented in a way that you get an idea of who they are, and then you go forward. Harley, Deadshot, and Diablo, I get. And there's probably the best three out of the lot that you care about. Everyone else, not so much. And then rounding out the list is the Joker, played by Jared, I'm not the subway guy, Leto. He is from Dallas Buyers Club, which I have not seen but want to see, Requiem for a Dream, and is rumored to be in the Justice League movie coming out soon. So, again, just a rumor, but we'll see what happens. Originally, the producers were looking at Ryan Gosling to play the role of the Joker, but they didn't want to do a multi-part deal for this role, so he backed out. So, oh well. But the whole thing with the Joker, and I'll talk about this in another part towards the end, is that he is there in the background. His main goal throughout the whole movie is to get Harley. She is part of the Suicide Squad on a mission, and he's out to get her to rescue her. And it's a very weird love story in general, which, again, I'll talk about this in a little bit with the comics. But the little bit that I saw, I was okay with. There were some images of them together that I was just, oh my god, that's exactly from the comics. It's like Harlequin in the actual jester costume, the black and red with a little hat, and the Joker's all dressed up in the nines. And there was an Alex Ross illustration of that, that he did that. It was very beautiful. And there's some beautiful shots of them together, and I get the chemistry, but this is not about Joker. He's not the main focus. And I guess a lot of people are upset about that. All right. So let's go into the good things, or at least a comparison on the graphic novel, because before the movie, I actually read The Suicide Squad by Adam Glass. And I read 7 books really easy through Hoopla. So again, the library, that's where you want to go to. And I looked at the comparison of what was in the comic versus what was in the movie. We have Deadshot. In the very beginning, there's a flashback sequence in which he's trying to assassinate someone. Batman comes along, stops him, but then Deadshot gives him something to remember him by, and he gets shot. But he still goes to jail. Whereas in the movie, Deadshot is with his daughter. And she kind of gets in the way between him and Batman, because she doesn't want him to be a bad guy. So basically, Deadshot gives himself up. But later on in the sequence, when Enchantress is trying to offer up the villains, a look at a better life, he imagined that he had actually was able to defeat Batman and was able to escape and not go to jail, because he wanted to be with his daughter. So, again, you have these kind of cool moments, and especially these characters like that, it gets to you, and I understand their motivation, and you understand their pain. Even though they're bad guys, there's still some semblance of humanity in them, so that was great. Diablo was another character that I mentioned that I liked a lot. In the comics, I have a cat in my butt who's taking up my seat and kind of wiggling around. Diablo was a gangbanger, and he went to a rival gang and set the house on fire. He later finds out that he not only killed that guy, he also killed a lot of women, he killed children, and he really had a turning point in his life. So basically, he's walking out of the house that's already on fire, the police are right there, and he just gives himself up. Basically, he's kind of like a pacifist in his head. He doesn't want to do this anymore. Which, the movie plays that more up, because he is reluctant to use his powers. But what made this even better is that it kind of changes it that he got angry because his wife didn't want him to do what he was doing, and where was he getting all this money from? Was to stop doing this, but he lost control, winds up not only killing his wife, but also his children. Thereby, he becomes the pacifist But his backstory, that even the other villains saw, that's really messed up. That was really messed up. Yes, you kill people. Bad people, good people, doesn't make a difference, but you don't kill women and children in that sense. Alright, so the next member in the Suicide Squad in a graphic novel is King Shark. If you have watched The Flash on TV, he was on season 2. He was there, and we got to see King Shark. So, in this version, in the movie, we don't see King Shark. We do get Killer Croc instead. So, they still play the same type of muscle character. I just wish there was just more development for the character, or just something a little bit more interesting. He does have a moment in which he finally gets to use his, I guess, lizard-like powers. He swims underwater and does something. But that's about it. So the other thing is that the first mission that the Suicide Squad in a graphic novel is assigned to is that they had to kill 60,000 people that are in their stadium. But it was because of a virus that they wanted to contain. So at first glance, it just seems like, wow, Waller just wants to take out people for no reason. But there was a bigger reason than that, because these people were becoming infected and becoming almost like, not vampires-ish, but along that line, zombie-ish, that kind of a thing. So when the task was done, Deadshot killed off one of the villains that was part of the group called Voltec, and everyone blamed him. He was the fall guy. So that seemed to be a running thing, that you were expendable, and like in the Joker in the second movie, The Dark Knight, how the Joker kept telling the next person, oh, once we do this, then I kill you, and so forth and so forth. Exact same thing with Waller. So seeing that kind of logic, that kind of precision with execution by other people who are willing to follow orders, I can see the Joker and Waller almost being identical. The only thing is that she's got law on her side. The first mission for the movie, The Suicide Squad, turns out to be the rescue of Waller. In the course of the movie, Enchantress does manage to escape from the control of Waller, but she was able to find an idol that contained her brother, who she let out, and in turn use some of his power to enhance her abilities to live without the heart that she was attached to. So by doing so, she grew really big with power, but the mission was to get Waller out of where she was. So, but again, along the way, the Slipknot character was killed, which is similar to what had happened with Voltec. Now, in the book, they didn't really go into details, but Coil, I guess it's some kind of snake baddie group, is what's in the comic, whereas Enchantress is the baddie in this book, I mean, in the movie. Now, Harley is, to me, again, a great character, and I love the backstory, because in the book, we do see Harley being told that Joker was skinned alive. So her mission to, in the story, was to escape from the group eventually and go to Gotham Police Department to find the mask or the skin face of the Joker and do something with it, which gets a little convoluted because she puts it on Deadshot and she tries to ask Deadshot, not wearing the Joker face, questions about their relationship, and then they kiss and like, ew. But in the process, there's a weird scene in which there's a bunch of Harley Quinns, various shapes, various genders and sizes. So they had like men and women and midgets and joint Siamese coming out to protect Harley Quinn. so they can allow her to escape. And so it gets really weird in the comic, but in the movie, Harley does escape via the helicopter because the Joker was able to get a helicopter. And it was just one of those great moments, just seeing them together again. But the helicopter does get shot down. Joker pushes her out to save her life. But later on, in the movie, Joker comes back again because you think he's dead. But he comes back again to break her out of jail. Now, the other thing was that the origin was in the comic. She's a psychiatrist, and she wind up falling in love with the Joker, and she wanted to commit to him. So he pushed her into this vat of goo that basically made Joker himself the way he did. So he pushes her, and she falls in. He drains out the vat, and then he thinks she's dead, but it turns out that she's pretty much like him. All pasty face, and she thought she was dead, but now she's free, so she becomes Harley Quinn. Now, in the movie, kind of plays similar to that. She basically does this herself. She does not get pushed off, so she's doing this of free will for the love of Joker. And at one point, she goes in the vat. She doesn't come out. Joker goes into the vat. He dives in and gets her out, and then you think she's dead, but she gets air, and again she feels free. But what's more satisfying is seeing them kiss, and swirls of paint around them in this white vat of goo. And I thought that it's very surreal, but it's a very memorable, and one of my favorite scenes watching this movie is seeing them get together. And even though they're psychotic, it's nicely done. Really, very happy with that. Now, the other thing is that if you have, again, Hoopla, plugging my library service once again, you can read the Suicide Squad book that came out in 1986 by John Ostrander. So, talk about going back a ways and looking at DC history. We do get a lot more different characters. Deathstroke. Oh god, Deathshot is still in there. We do get the Bronze Tiger. Captain Cold is in it. Captain Boomerang is also in it. So there are similarities from the revamped version of the Suicide Squad from the 80s, and then the newer one, like the All New 52 and so forth. Adam Glass had did that updated version. But as I mentioned, the Suicide Squad goes way, way back. It started with the Batman Brave and Bold. Not Batman Brave and Bold, but it was the Brave and Bold series, in which this became part of it. And I'm just trying to get that information for you. So the series began in the Brave and the Bold series. So the team originated with Rick Flagg Jr., his girlfriend Karen Grace, Dr. Hugh Evans, and Jess Bright. So not a whole lot of powered people, and honestly, I don't think there were, because I looked on the first issue and they're fighting with guns. So again, this is dealing with the era of McCarthyism, and eventually the team does change over in the 80s, more updated, and again, just recently we get again the New 52. So, I didn't realize how far back the comics went. So, I'm kind of happy to see this all play out, because now, as a comic book fan and a DC fan and a Marvel fan, I'm a comic book fan. That's it. I love getting inspired to read all these materials that are out there from the past, from the present, to the future. Whatever that is, this is what is going to help get kids and me back into reading and enjoying the source material, because I want to see where all this is coming from. So it does justice in that sense of wanting more, because we are going to get another Suicide Squad movie in a couple of years. And that was already decided before the movie even came out. So, aside from that. Now, this is not the first Suicide Squad that I've seen on the big screen, or I should say, the little screen. Arrow had its own Suicide Squad, and that was for Season 2, Episode 16. John Diggle and his wife, Lila, had led the team. Amanda Waller was the one that got them together to lead the team of Deadshot, Shrapnel, and Bronze Tiger. Now, what's weird about this was that part of that team was, at one time, going to include Harlequin. Harley Quinn, not Harlequin, like the romance novel. But we don't see her. You actually hear her at one point, which was the voice of Tara Strong, who does, in the animated series for Batman, Harlequin. Harley Quinn, keep doing that. And she was in a publicity photo in which there is a picture of her with those guys for the Suicide Squad. But they never did it. So they left her out, but there was a picture of her recently from the Comic-Con over in San Diego in which Tara got dressed up as Harley Quinn, and she looks fantastic. So if you haven't seen it, go in and Google it. You'll be glad you did. Alright, so I wish there was a little bit more of Suicide Squad, but for some reason, and this is what kind of really ticked me off, is that they killed off Amanda Waller. Originally, the DC's people, the executives, said the universe is separate. TV is separate from the movies, vice versa. Marvel, on the other hand, the cinematic universe, it's all encompassing. Daredevil on Netflix, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. on ABC, the movies, they're all connected. So with the DC take, this allows you to do the multiple universe or the multiverse. So you can have Earth 22, Earth 66, whatever that is version of, you can do different takes of those same characters. But why was Amanda killed off and Deadshot as well? Some theorized that, thinking that because of the new Suicide Squad movie, they don't want to get the two confused, which I call bullcrap. They should have left it alone. Make yourself distinct from the competition. You plotted the course, and then you backtrack. So that's kind of unforgivable on that. All right. So let's talk about some controversy. So as I mentioned earlier, the Die Antwoord is a South African rap rave group. If you have seen them or Google the name, you'll notice they kind of look familiar. And if you've seen the movie Chappie, which I thought it was crappy, they are in that movie. So the duo is Ninja and Yolanda Visser. So their beef is with the director, David Ayer, because he accused Ayers of jockeying their style. Now, everyone was kind of like, on the fence when they first saw the Joker with the body tattoos, the short hair, and the grills. Alright, well, that's fine. Until you see the comparison of the two together, and there is similarities. So I give you on that. Now, as far as Yolandi and Harley Quinn, I really can't say they're similar. But again, if you look at certain videos, there are similar styles. But the Harley Quinn outfit that she was wearing, Blondie wore that years ago. And that's something that I saw from my friend Tony over at Cinema Viewfinder on Facebook, and he posted that picture, which I thought that was brilliant. Because honestly, you know, if you look at Ninja, you know, you could say, well, he stole that look from, you know, Iggy Pop or some other, you know, wasting away character that's out there that's in the music. So everything is always a variation of something else. But in this case, I'm going to have to side with Die Hard at Work, just because there were some similarities that were just like, oh, you're really pushing that envelope to making almost an exact copy. And Kara, I should say, had, because she had worked on the Ugly Boy video for them, had talked to her, the group, letting them know what was going on. But honestly, the other side of this, if that, you have the internet, and you have someone on the inside talking to you about this. Why are you complaining about this now? Other than the fact that I'm talking about this on my podcast and getting more publicity for that reason. Because if that's the case, then you could have done this a long time ago and done something about it legally, rather than taking to Instagram and bitch and complain about what was done to you. The other side, the next character is someone who is suing the WB and the DC Studios for falsely advertising the Joker. His claim was that there was not enough Joker, and on the trailers, and he points out several scenes and details, that all those Joker moments were not in the movie. So he felt that he was lied to and demanded to get his money. But of course that didn't work out. He started a petition to get this rolling. So you can actually find it on change.org. Under the username is BlackPanther2016, which I find that oddly enough, that's a Marvel character that's trying to go against a DC movie. But in any case, he has about, he's 170 something short at the time when I recorded the podcast earlier today, to complete the needed 500 signatures. So he's more than halfway there. So I'm not sure I agree with him, but his logic is that if you go to McDonald's and if you go to fast food menu and you look at the pictures, if you ask for a quarter pounder, you're not expecting to get chicken nuggets or something to that effect. And I agree with you on that principle, yes. But, like with many things, I would rather wait for the DVD so I can at least feel like I'm getting my content worth, that I can see what was finally happening. Whether or not they could put it into the DVD, who knows. But again, going back to the overall tone of the movie, it's not about the Joker. Just like it's not about Batman. It's not about those characters. It's just about this squad. So I'm happy with this movie, and I'm more than ecstatic with what I saw. Yes, I had problems with it, but I laughed a lot. I had a good time with it. So for all its faults, it won me over very early, and I was on board. So the reason why I say that, because usually August, when we look at the box office, is the crappiest time to ever release a movie. If you're a blockbuster movie, May, June, July. July, you're pushing it. After that, you might as well be putting out Space Chimp 16. So now what that trend was Guardians of the Galaxy that came out a couple of years ago. Its opening weekend was $94.3 million. And it kept that going, because even with a drop off, second week it had $42.1 million. And it was a huge success for Marvel. So, Suicide Squad pulled in, on its first weekend, $133.6 million. So those numbers are huge. Again, huge. So the second week is projected to do at least $44 million. So again, it's above Guardians of the Galaxy. But Rotten Tomatoes, once again, gave it crappy BVS, I can't do it, I'm dyslexic. BVS rating numbers, the high 20s. But audiences actually enjoy this. So there seems to be this kind of weird polar opposite reaction. I'll talk about this in the Star Trek podcast, but Star Trek had a high favorable number in Rotten Tomatoes, but is now considered a flop financially because it could not do enough money in box office to be profitable. So even though it was a better movie, it flopped. And I hate to say that because I don't want this franchise to die, nor do I want DC to suffer the exact same fate. Recently, there was a letter from some employee, whether it's a current or ex-employee of Warner Brothers, that had an open letter talking about how everything's all screwed up. And to some points, I understand that grievance. Patty Jenkins, who is the director for Wonder Woman, was not mentioned directly, but because of Wonder Woman, potentially could be another mess. Is there some kind of bias that's out there that does not want DC to win? I can't say that's what it is, because I don't see Marvel boys petitioning, don't watch DC movies because they're sucking all that. You know, you're not rallying the troops and making this a boycott. But I do believe there is some inner circle, whatever that is trying to undermine the success of DC and trying to do the DCEU. It's been a tough thing to do. Like I said before, Marvel movies sucked before Disney. Disney knows how to market their stuff. They know how to make a good product. They have the money to bankroll their movies. They had an agenda, just like the Cylons from Battlestar Galactica. No, they had a plan. That's what it was. Sorry, not the agenda. But they're fantastic at what they did. DC and Warner Brothers, it's stop and go, stop and go, stop and go. We got great Batman series from Nolan. Man of Steel is okay for some. BVS, horrible. But for me, I'm still on the side of DC. I've enjoyed Batman vs. Superman. I've enjoyed the Man of Steel, all the Batmans. Suicide Squad is high on my list. Wonder Woman has to hit bigger than Suicide Squad. If by the time Justice League does come to this big screen, if it does not do huge numbers, it is by then DC has lost the competition and should stop forsaking Aquaman, Black Adam, The Flash. All that needs to stop after that. I want to see a Justice League movie, just like I wanted to see an Avengers movie, and a Captain America, and Iron Man, and Batman. Comic book movies are what I want to see as a fan, and I've been waiting for DC to get their act together. They're getting there. I don't know how much longer they'll get to that speed in which they're popping out hit after hit, but there's a lot riding on getting this right. And I don't know if DC has enough time that they can afford to bleed this kind of money, given they've funded really crappy movies in the past. And Pan was one of them that Kara was part of, which was mentioned in that open letter. So, it's terrible. I really hate to see this going to be about numbers. But I hope by the time this podcast airs that it's doing great on the weekend, and globally it will keep on making its money back. So, again, they took a lesson from not doing BVS completely dark. Although the movie is dark, it is dark also with humor. And it was funny. And it was enjoyable. And it was a good summer movie. And they had my money. And I will go back again and support them again. So, because I'm sure my daughter would want to see this, because she told me not to see it, but I will go see it again. Alright. So, sorry for the long podcast, but it's been a while since I've done a podcast, and I did all this kind of research thinking that, oh, the kids will be really entertained with me being knowledgeable and fantastic with my brilliance early today, but, you live and you learn. So again, thank you very much for listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show. Sci-fi, from a certain point of view. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.